Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Tess.
So to start us off with, what are some of the links that you've talked about between Olympics and cinema?
Oh, yeah, there's quite a spillover between Olympic athletes and the cinema. Not only have there been films about the Olympic Games, most notably a fantastic film by Leni Riefenstahl of the 1936 Olympic Games, a film called Olympia, which is considered to be one of the best films ever made. It really is a superb film to get a chance to see it. But a lot of the Olympic athletes have become cinema stars, particularly in the role of Tarzan. There have been four Olympic stars who have played Tarzan. There's Herman Brix, who I think was a javelin thrower, I think, from 28. Johnny Weissmuller, the swimmer, who was also Jungle Jim, if people of my vintage may remember Johnny as Jungle Jim in the TV series. There was Glenn Morris and Buster Crabbe. So four have played Tarzan, and some of Tarzan's leading ladies, the Janes, have also been Olympic swimmers. Eleanor Holm has been one of them. So there's this sort of flow in and out, if you like, between cinema and the Olympics. And then that sort of makes sense because the Olympics are a very media-based and cinematic event.
So would you be able to talk us through a bit more of the political side of the Olympics?
Well, initially, your listeners may be aware that when the ancient games were held, this is before the modern games back in ancient Greece, something called the Pax Olympica was in place, which meant that all warring nations put down their arms for the times that the games were on. And when de Coubertin, as you mentioned, Pierre de Coubertin, started the modern Olympics, he had the same idea that they should be played between individuals rather than between nations, so that national rivalries and jealousy shouldn't come into play. But of course, that hasn't been the case. The Olympic Games have really been, I'd like to think of it as kind of a micro world. Like, think of the Olympic Village as a little model of the world where all those athletes and countries get together. And the political disputes and jealousies and rivalries are played out on the Olympic stage as well. So there's been a whole series of issues regarding, for example, the exclusion and inclusion of South Africa over apartheid, whether the two Germanys after World War II should be represented singly, when and whether Japan and Germany should be readmitted to the game, the question of Taiwan versus China. There's the American boycott of the Moscow Games in 1980, and the tit-for-tat boycott in 1984 by the Eastern Bloc. So really all the political rivalries have been played out in the games as well.
So women first appeared in the 1900 Olympics, and even then it was only 22 out of the 997 athletes.
Yeah.
Are there still any restrictions that female do face in the Olympics?
Yeah, it's interesting that there's still one sport now in which men and women compete together, and that's equestrian. That's both the riders and the horses. And in the past, there have been times where women and men have competed in sailing and in shooting together, but they abolished that because the men outperformed the women. So generally speaking, there's very little unisex competition. There's a good reason for that, too. The fact is that the men will just annihilate the women in each case. So to give an example of the differences in sexes, Paula Radcliffe, who is the great British marathon runner, the gap between her time and the men's time is the smallest percentage gap of all running events. But if Paula were to run against men, she would finish 5,000th in the world. So there are 5,000 men better than the best woman marathon runner. Another example is the Matildas, the Australian soccer team, one of the best teams in the world, a good chance for a medal in Rio. They were beaten 7-0 by an under-15 boys team. So there's a huge difference in abilities between men and women, so it's still separated. But more and more women compete in the same, not with the men, but in the same events. There are some exceptions. So women, until recently, I think it's still known, I'm not sure, didn't compete in the 1500 metres swim. They had an 800 metre swim. I think they compete in a 3000 metres individual pursuit as opposed to a 4000 for men in the cycling track. And of course, the gymnastics are very different for men and women. So they're becoming much, much more similar, but there are still differences there.
So the Olympics, it always draws an absolutely huge audience. Why do you think that after all this time, so many people still tune in to watch the Olympics?
I kind of think as the Olympics as being a kind of theatre, you know, and it's a theatre in many senses. It's a kind of morality play where all those ethical issues of, you know, what's it mean to be a natural person as opposed to someone who takes drugs and so forth? What's it mean to be a man as opposed to a woman? You know, all these issues about intersex athletes and the South African runner Caster Semenya. all the political dramas that are played out, all the, you know, the personal stories of triumph and tragedy and so forth. So it's a bit like, you know, it's kind of like a reality show, isn't it, where in the end only one person remains, the winner remains. So I think it shares a lot with all of those common forms of drama, the soap operas that we have in everyday life. I think that's the attraction of it.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us on The Daily this morning.
It's a pleasure, Tess.